You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're celebrating the class of 1968 here at the Wake Up Tucson show with Master DJ Ed Alexander.
My class reunion, 68.
Whew.
Yeah, no, I had 50 like 2 years ago. Is that crazy?
You went to that, right?
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Oh, very good.
Good. Good to see people after all those years.
This hour of Wake Up brought to you by Cabco AZ, Central Arizona Block Company. Masonry products made here, sold directly to the public to make your outdoor living spaces better, brighter, and stronger. And Ed's going to help me with this. We have locations at Wetmore, Valencia, and what's the third one, Ed?
Sierra Vista.
Ah, very nice. If you missed anything on the show today or this week, we've had some great interviews. Go to KVOI.com, go to the podcast page. We had the Secretary of the Interior, David Bernhardt, talking about opening up national parks. The Grand Canyon is reopening this weekend. We talked about working with special governors like the guy next door in California. What else did we have, Ed, this week? People should check on the case.
Who was the other?
We had the head of the Customs and Border Protection on, Morgan.
That was good, right? We had McSally on. We had...
I'm in so trouble on that McSally.
Yeah, well, you know. What else did we do? It was a good week. We opened up Marana. We did a lot of things.
That's true. Dan Shiro was great on that one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yep. So,
talking about the Board of Soups.
I will tell you that this McSally thing. So what happened was Daniel McCarthy took the me asking Martha twice about the primary, and then the next segment I did a breakdown on why she should be doing things like this. And, of course, it's been made into the 4.5-minute Facebook commercial ad that's being blown out there from Daniel McCarthy's campaign. So now I'm really in trouble. If Martha comes on this show again, I'd be in shock. But 8:09 in the morning, let's go to Ted Maxwell, who earlier this year was hanging out with in the cinema box during the State of the Union. Mr. Fancy Pants here. General Maxwell, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Very well. How are you doing?
And you're right. Your take on your interview with Senator McSally's definitely got you some traction, hasn't it?
It's either traction or grief, Ted. So it's going to be...
Yeah.
One or the other, and what were you going to say?
It could be. It's really kind of interesting, though, because I heard it that day when it was going down, and there are a lot of reasons that I think are valid that you could want to consider a primary debate. But on the other side is most of the incumbents, the power of getting reelected is being the incumbent. So she's really, in some ways, going to be putting herself out there in a situation that's maybe unnecessary. So it's you know, politics is a strange game, and there's a lot of things. If I was king, I would probably start changing about how we do our elections and such. But Martha and I have talked about that in the past, about her role during this campaign, and I think she's making it pretty clear that she believes she's the preeminent candidate, the only one that has a chance of winning, and so therefore is going to take the tact. As you pointed out, that she tried last year and it necessarily didn't work. But it really comes down to the party. And I think what's changed in our political standpoint is, and this is both sides, the trying to get the Bernie Sanders supporters out for the knees and get some of the more conservative members of the party. People have shown a propensity now to stay at home.
After my hubbub with Martha, a friend of the show who is a bona fide real deal Republican donor, one of those fancy foothill donors, okay, calls me up. He's in agreement with me because his biggest problem is that he doesn't see anything different with the pattern of this campaign than he did 2 years ago. And he doesn't see any willingness of Martha and her handlers in D.C. to actually change one bit the tack from 2 years ago. And that's the part that scares the hell out of him.
Yeah, there's some definite truth to that. You know, you think if something didn't work, you might want to change it up. But I think a lot of the messaging that you're going to see as we get farther into this campaign is there may it may be less about who the candidate is and about who the voting for which candidate will lead to the different leadership you're going to have back in D.C. You know, we see it just at all levels. So the party that's got the majority gets to set the agenda, gets to have the chairs of all the committees. It's, you know, there's advantages to being the party in the majority, and I think that's something you may see. And this is just me guessing now, but you say, may see the McSally campaign drive in that direction.
Well, again, it's the idea. What I'm tired of, Ted, is this: the hold your nose and vote for me, even though you may not dig me, and I may not dig reaching out to you. That part is the part that's tiring. Okay.
Absolutely. I fully agree with you. And it's kind of funny that you use that reference, because the other day, talking with one of the candidates in CD2, I used that same reference. Is sometimes the best legislation we get is when all the people voting for a bill are holding their nose, because they've probably had to give up something they wanted. They've had to compromise, and maybe overall we may not have made as much movement in a direction on some legislation, but maybe we've got better legislation moving forward. So it's kind of funny to hear you use the hold the nose and vote, or that sometimes the hold the nose and vote applies even within the legislature.
Correct. Here's some other things. Martha has 18 million. Mark Kelly has 31 million. Those are the numbers right now. And she is definitely polling behind him right now. So,
yeah, there's definitely some challenges. The latest polling has actually moved even farther in the direction of a diversity. I mean, the polls are polls. We don't know.
I know.
I think a lot of people have lost faith and trust in the accuracy of the polls, you know, who you get to participate and such. But a couple of firms that I think are more accurate than some others have been doing the polling up in the out of the Phoenix area. The numbers right now are not looking are not trending in Senator McSally's favor.
Let's do this, Ted. When we come back, let's talk about the House going back into session recently and this COVID kind of protection legislation. I assume you're on top of that, right?
That sounds great. We are. It's something we've supported as far as getting the liability protection in place. However, there's what they passed there, we do have some concerns with as well.
All right. Hold on. Well, that's a perfect tease for radio, Ted. Good job. I like that.
Glad I can help.
Thank you, sir. We're hanging out with Ted Maxwell, Southern Arizona Leadership Council. When we come back, we're going to talk about this legislation that was passed in the House up in Phoenix about protecting businesses from COVID lawsuits and stuff. So wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Ed Alexander spinning the hits of 1968. 8:19 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Good friend of the show who's been texting with Ed and I about the McSally kerfuffle, right? I said if she and Ted Maxwell from Southern Arizona Leadership, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you.
He said, well, I said, look, if she doesn't change her tact, I think she's going to lose. And he said, maybe true, but we're going to have to keep that seat. I understand your concerns for sure. It's going to be an uphill battle. She is not popular. Well, you just shot it right there, and you just shot it right in the butt right there. She's not as popular as we'd like to think. I think she's a good senator. I just think she needs help on her candidacy. That's all. But I want to get drag Ted back into that. Now, Ted, I will tell you, you're an Oral Valley guy. Chard at the movie theater is open for dine-in. So,
okay, good. That's good to hear. Yeah, it's good to see some of the restaurants opening up. Obviously, we've been supporting me and my wife have been doing a lot of takeout, trying to support them. You know, and it's, you know, we'll get into the county thing maybe at some point today, but
yes, please.
It is good to see them have some opportunity. And the key, in the words of the governor, is for everybody who, both the restaurant owners as well as the people that frequent them, to not give the media the stories that they're looking for. That's going to show why this is a train wreck. Do it. Responsibility be, you know, comply with what the governor's guidance is out there. The restaurants do it. It's amazing how quick to, you know, overly crowded, you know, restaurants and bars were all over the press the day after the thing, because that's what the press looks for, that side of the story. And we need to help avoid that.
I totally agree with that. Let's get to the Arizona legislature. This is the old HB 2912, sponsored by John Kavanaugh. Explain the guts of this bill, Mr. Maxwell.
But there's two, for me on this bill, there's two things of note. One is they're trying to give some civil liability during the corona outbreak. I mean, it is very difficult to ask restaurants and businesses and, you know, whether it's retail or anything, to open back up and not have protections from frivolous lawsuits. And they're going to emphasize always the frivolous lawsuits. And that's really what you are trying to beat. But there are a ton of things that in this time, businesses have taken chances. There's businesses that have gone out and made PPE. They've turned their production facilities into making masks, making, some of them are making ventilators, some of them are making, you know, gowns, shields, all that. So what these are all businesses doing things to help in a crisis situation. They're being supported by those, both elected and the public in general, of doing this. And they need to have some protection to know that what they're doing and they're trying to do right isn't going to result in somebody basically trying to get an exorbitant amount, or more so, even just threaten them with a lawsuit to get them to settle and pay out of court. We need some protections in place. And so a piece of this is putting those liabilities protections, both product opening from people catching the virus in your office or space, workspace, or your restaurant. We've got to have some things that we know that the burden of proof has to be truly in the form of gross negligence or significant. But there's even things like school systems that could be sued, because there's schools, since they've been shut down in March as a result of an executive order, that are not complying with all the state laws of what they're required to provide. So there's potential for lawsuits out there that could be just a mess.
So let me ask you this question, because this is definitely necessary to get things, quote, back to as normal as possible economically, is doing something like this. Please tell me why this went down on a party line vote. Why did every Democrat in the House vote no on this bill for protections for businesses and schools and things like that?
Well, I watched a good part of that discussion yesterday on this bill specifically. And the common theme was that most of the Democrats were saying they believe that the protection's already there. There were some that were getting up and saying it's the workers that need protection, it's the citizens that need protection, you know, and the businesses don't need protection. But there were others that said that they believe that you needed to trust the court systems to be smart enough to throw out litigation that is just not valid. And SCLC has been part of the Arizona Association's COVID task force, which has been putting out some things that the business community at large are agreeing on. And one of the recent ones is a letter to all of our federal delegation asking them to put some some liability protection for businesses, both for transmission, both for products, you know, in that case of where companies have gone into making hand sanitizer, because you can stretch almost anything. You know, we've seen the legal system do it where you just go, there's really not a relationship between that, but you can make it happen. So we need to have the businesses with some protection. Now, there is a piece in this bill that I'm not, and as a whole, I'd say SLC is probably not excited about, and that is the part that takes down the authority really of the governor in the declaration of emergency declaration and his rules. I mean, just this morning on your show, we were talking about how, hey, if the governor gives the guidance, the governor puts out the restrictions, those are what we should comply with. But in this bill, it really takes any action. They ended up writing it very specifically to the COVID-19 outbreak, but basically says if you violate the governor's order of protection, you can face a civil penalty and a $100 fine. It's taken all the teeth out of the governor's ability to enforce what he's put in place. And we can get into a long conversation about the difficulty of enforcing any of these guidelines or other actions. It's going to be difficult anyway, but it's definitely a shot at the authority of the governor to declare an emergency situation and put in specific guidance. Because if this was to be applied outside of the COVID-19 case and there was some other reason that we were either, you know, in a true shelter in place, I always hate the shelter at home line, because we're not, shelter in place is a much more critical thing, the stay-at-home, you know, guidance. But that's the part of that the bill that kind of worries us. I'm hearing that there's another bill over in the Senate that's being considered that would still provide the liabilities but may not have quite as much of an impact on the governor's authority. But it's, you know, this still has to get through the Senate. So there is more that's going on, and I'm hoping that we'll have some opportunities to work with crafting good legislation in this front. This came down to, like you said, we're back to partisan politics. I think there was probably a couple weeks when this first thing broke out that everybody was trying to do things without thinking about it from the political standpoint. But you know, we are truly a country that is divided on partisan politics, and we're back there. That's why I think it went through that way.
I think so too, right? This is a political thing. I keep saying that. So first of all, Trump's the president, all right? So that's everything's on fire from that. Number two, this state is massive for a U.S. presidential election and a Senate and the balance of the Senate. And so anything
absolutely
to me that makes this, if you're a D, if you can make this as miserable as possible to make it everyone Martha McSally's and Donald Trump's fault, you're going to let it just. You're gonna let this place bleed as hard as possible, and that's the part that's, I'm gonna say, sad but not unexpected.
And I agree with you on that. It's really I wish we'd see more partisan politics, but more across the aisle agreements on some of these things, because I think you're gonna in a lot of cases get better law that may stay in place and have an impact because.
Did any of the Democrats during the debate yesterday say they were worried about the part about going after Doug's emergency powers?
No, I did not see that come up.
Right, so they're saying, oh, let the courts take care of it; it'll be fine. So what? So someone who wants to sue someone on a COVID thing, you know, their lawyer can shop the case to the right lawyer and just make this thing more miserable. It's better just to kill it now that they can't do it.
And that is the overall concern right there is from a business perspective. You know, whenever you ask people, it's kind of like goes back to the Good Samaritan laws. You know, you're asked, we reached out to businesses and organizations to help supply, you know, items and personal protection equipment that was in need and we were shortfalls on. Sure, there were a lot of people out there trying to sell and mark up stuff too, and that's kind of fallen by the wayside. But there's a lot of good companies that have turned their manufacturing process around to contribute to the needs and potential. Is there potential that one of them, it's something's not going to be perfect? I mean, those companies that are now making the ventilators and putting them through and the testing, that's a bold, bold step when you know those things are going to go into use in the hospitals.
Correct.
And it's you've got to have some protection to know that what is the intent and the purpose of what these people are trying to do.
All right.
When the companies were asked to help out.
All right, Ted, hold on. We're going to go do bottom of the hour news. We'll come back. You mentioned it earlier. Let's go jump into the Pima County restaurant cesspool together, and we'll see if you and I can make some logic out of that. So hold on for a second, please, sir. Oh, here we go, a little Marvin. Look at Ed spinning the class of 68. Here we go.
Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell. Yo, I need to get by.
8:35 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, hanging out with Ed Alexander and Ted Maxwell, Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Ted, what year did you graduate high school, if I may be so bold?
1980.
Okay. There you go.
1980.
Cool kids.
That was in the My Sharona days, as we like to say. So
that was about the time all that was breaking big. Yeah, a lot of us were good. More, you know, Springsteen, Doors, Stones, mm-hmm. rockers, and then there was a whole starting of the wave for the punk rock movement. I think was starting to really grow.
He's definitely an AC/DC guy. General Maxwell here, so
definitely more on along with that line than some of the other things that were being played back then.
8:36 in the morning, and before we get going on our Pima County discussion, a listener, I'll tell you who it is later, Ted, but I don't have his permission to say his name, but I want to. He wrote me a little love note about this Pima County thing. Because in the first segment I talked about Pima County would have just been better doing you know, doing strongly worded guidelines and best practices with all these great restaurateurs endorsing it and trying to share the love with maybe some of the more mom and pops that needed help with this. But I want to get to this person. Speaking of best practices, maybe we need to get a state law saying we can fine the county administrator and chairman of the Board of Soups when there's more than 10% of the roads are in failed or poor condition. That's a safety issue. Nothing quite as annoying as people who are incompetent at their own jobs, including roads and parks, telling others how they should operate their businesses, period, unquote. Have a great weekend. All right. Ted Maxwell, give me the breakdown of this whole Pima County restaurant reopening thing from your point of view, sir.
Well, it's actually been a conversation that I've found interesting, and I've found, you know, I'm more convinced than ever that Facebook's just not the place to have political discussions. I don't engage on there, but just watching some of the banter back and forth, I mean, with people going into even real big depth about it. But the thing that I see, obviously, one, I think the governor's been doing a pretty good job of rolling this out. He's fighting. There's two big storms. You know, I've heard somebody, I think Phil Boas did an op-ed in the Republic that talked about how he's got the two whirlwinds. If you go totally preventative on the healthcare side, you're going to kill the economy. That's going to have dramatic effects. If you go open the economy wide open, you maybe could kill to increase the other things. There's still, that's the one that there's more unknowns at. I'd say the other way, you know, if you go with the businesses closed, you're going to kill the economy. But I like the idea of guidelines. The question where it gets structured is, how do you enforce them? Because you really can't. Guidelines are just that, they're guidelines. And you mentioned, you know, maybe you could have positive showing, signs that saying this restaurant complies and meets, you know, Pima guideline standards, and do it with a little bit of positive enforcement. But in one of his calls shortly after opening the restaurants, Governor Ducey was pretty clear that he believed that it really comes down to the populace to self enforce, as well as the industry. So it's, you hate to say that we should go out and, you know, there was a big concern about the whole snitch mentality, but the fact of the matter is, when it comes to restaurant uses and where people are going to travel and what restaurants people are going to frequent, they've got to feel confident with what they're going back into. I think consumer confidence is the biggest thing we need to build more than anything, because even now, and I have dined at a couple of restaurants since they reopened, and they're still pretty sparse. And it's not just because of the spacing requirements. There's we've got to get the confidence in people to go back out that it's safe and make, you know, get everybody to understand that. So pointing out those who are violating it and flaunting it and ignoring it, you've got to have a little hammer with that carrot. I think it's a little bit of both, and you got to figure out a way to do it.
Well, let me ask you a question, sir. Do you think the way this has transgressed in the last 14 days has increased or decreased consumer confidence in the restaurants of Pima County?
It hasn't helped.
Thank you.
Because one, it's the arguments about the wrong things. You know, I really would have liked to see the guidelines put in place. The chamber, and I know that, you know, I've seen on some of the Facebook posts, you know, where's the voice of the chamber? Where's the voice of SLC? And the voices are there. Both our organizations are working. But we're not going to have the debate in public. That's just not how, at least for SLC, that's not how it's done. But the chamber's got a restaurants committee that's been working with a lot of these restaurateurs to come up with what they, as is expressed by Ray Flores in the paper day, and you pointed out, come up with these guidelines.
But the chamber sat there while the restaurants were told this was supposed to be guidelines and best practices, and then they find out later it was going to get codified. Well, where's the chamber saying, where Guymon spoke twice? You know, how do you advocate for your businesses and say, hey, what are you doing? You led these people to believe that this was guidelines and best practices, and now you want to pound them with fines and all this other jazz? Where was that? What is anyone going to public? It's so funny. The chamber, you guys have a different mission. But, you know, you say, oh, we're having our secret discussions with everyone. Don't worry, we're going to handle it. Well, if you're not out there publicly saying this is what we stand for, no one knows what you stand for. And that's the part that sickens me, Ted. So, but I'm right, telling you, how does the chamber, if they're the big advocates and Amber's kissing Huckleberry's rear end, right? And this is so great, right? How does the, how do the,
I think that's an overstatement.
Oh,
what it is. I mean, I understand.
But the restaurant owners feel they got duped.
And the restaurant, my belief is that a lot of the restaurant owners, not all of them, obviously, had a lot of input into those guidelines that they were put up there. And I don't think there's any question that there's a belief that they were duped. I don't know if anybody expected it to become codified in the Pima County health care regulations.
No one ever expects to get duped, Ted. That's what dupes about.
that is true. And what we've got to watch now, they've obviously walked back some of them. They haven't walked back all of them. And I think there needs to be push back to where you're going to take it that, yes, these are the guidelines. The restaurants need to know. And that's why I went back to the words of the governor where we need to self-enforce. You know, the restaurants have to hold themselves accountable. It's very difficult. I know early, before everything got shut down, there were restaurants that were starting to do it, to take some of these things into account, starting to do spacing in their restaurants. And quote from a restaurant owner, people would come in and go, no, I don't want to sit over there. I want to sit there. We've got that table closed right now for spacing. I don't care. I'm the customer. I want to sit there. The way this game's played, and it's the same thing with masks. I've heard stories about masks and people going into to doctor's office and getting pissed off, or going in for an eye appointment and getting pissed off. If you don't like the rules put in place by the restaurant, don't frequent them.
Right.
Frequent the place. If you don't like the rule put in place, you know, we sometimes rely on our civil liberties and our personal rights, and trust me, I'm a huge believer that we've got rights in this country and we need to have them. But the idea of if an owner, shop owner says, you need to wear a mask to come in and into my store, and if you don't like that, don't go. You've got the right not to go, but you don't have the right to stand there and berate the people about it. The employees are just enforcing the laws that were put in, or the rules that were put in place by their companies. And I think the companies have the rights to do that. I'd rather see the companies have the rights to do it, and then the citizenry will show what works or not.
So when I said what I said before, which was, weren't they just better off sticking with the guidelines and the best practices and have a big press thing where they're sitting there, Huckleberry, Valadez, you can put all your chamber people out there, Ray Flores, Travis, and all these people, and saying, hey, Tucson restaurants, we're going to do this right, and this is the way you should do it. Wasn't that better than what we just went through the last 10 days?
Well, oh, absolutely. And what I really would have loved to seen, honestly, Chris, is all five of the supervisors up there. You know, it goes back to what we talked about earlier about it being, we've become such a political partisan nature. It's like you don't want to give. Well, let's both sides give. So maybe, you know, one side doesn't like some of the guidelines that are being put in place, but the other side doesn't like the fact that we're not going to codify it and make it enforceable. Well, maybe you both give on that. We come up with something that's better for us all.
Well, and it didn't help when one of the restaurateurs goes into a restaurant during this battle and the Pima County health inspector is sitting there behind the line not wearing a mask, right? It didn't help that when all these restaurateurs who are asked to do all these things go to the meeting and half the people aren't wearing masks and they're not wiping down anything, saying, oh, you should do this or we're going to hit you with a $500 fine, which was later changed. But it's kind of like,
right.
I couldn't ask for this to be rolled out in the worst way humanly possible. Ed Alexander had his hand up, and I got to get to him.
Thank you. It's very confrontational. But no, so you said there aren't that many people in the restaurants yet. This thing just reopened in a week. But I went to two restaurants yesterday, one for lunch and one for dinner. I don't know if they're going to be open when I get there. I don't know. If the chamber is worried about businesses, you could go to their page, and there will be something about restaurants. All it has about restaurants is the regulations. There's nothing about, hey, go visit a restaurant, go visit a business, get back out.
Or here's
There's
a list of the ones that are
the
open
chamber
for dining.
Website
How
about
that?
Anything that has to do with business. Okay, I'm just saying. How would I know? Nobody knows where they should go, when they should go, how they should go, and nobody's telling them because the county supervisors aren't going to tell them. They don't have a clue. So this is the chamber. This is Visit Tucson. This is the Restaurant Association. They need to let us know. Somebody needs to say something, and the press needs to cover it. But the press is always worried about just how many deaths. Blah 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 blah. There's nothing is getting out, and that's what the point that you made, Chris, of that somebody's got to say something. And that's why maybe the chamber should stand up or something like that. But nobody is. Nobody knows what's going on except that, let's go see. I know the malls are open. I know the restaurants are open. I don't know if I can go to a bar. I don't know which bar has a restaurant. It's crazy.
No, you're right. The part of telling people which places you can dine in. I had this thing, this buddy from the U of A minor. It's like, she's like, hey, where do we eat in the Northwest side that we can dine in? And here's me. She's like, well, you're the restaurant, bro. What do you got for me? And I'm like, let me look. Ted, I'm sorry. Go.
No. I agree with you. I think that in respect that it would be great to have a list of the restaurants out there. Because it's not universal, they're not all opening. I mean, the governor in his talk said he, you know, felt it was everybody's duty to open. But again, it's their own businesses, so they can do what they choose to do.
Absolutely.
And there is no single source to go at. I think you're right. Even if we had a source that we could rely on, even if it was the paper just publishing the restaurants that are open, it would be helpful. But they've got to get that information's got to get to those folks too. It's mm-hmm. There's so many restaurants in this town right now. I think most of us, and I'm sure the folks at the chamber, I'm sure the folks at even the restaurateurs that are going to other restaurants, everybody. I mean, Chris, you even do it. It's kind of like, okay, let me check where we can go. I truly drive around and go, are they open yet? I mean, get right. on the website. Yeah. Are they open yet? Right. So there is no point there, and we're not. What I think, if we could get some press that publicly would get out there and make statements about how these restaurants are doing it right, that's how you're going to influence public confidence.
Exactly.
When people start understanding that you're doing it right, and the paper should step up and write positive articles about the restaurants that are doing it right, because there's a lot of them out there that are doing it. Matter of fact, probably the majority of them. You know, they're. And we can keep working. I think we should keep working on getting the guidelines to be realistic.
If you had a reason, I want to get back to your thing when I said doing the big press conference, right? If you did a thing that was just actually guidelines with all those people, I think Steve and Allie would be shoulder and shoulder with the 3Ds for something that was guidelines and best practices. So
right. Well, and that's what it really came down to on that point, Chris. And I know you've been on this for the last couple. It was how it was rolled out. It was how it was managed. Everything from the letter to the governor to inform him. Was Ramon's intentions good just to let him know, hey, we're going to do this before we do this? I'm not really wrapped up in when he said we're probably going to pass it, because you know what? I think any of us, if we were asked if they were going to pass that, would probably have said yes. I mean, it's one of those things that.
But it's different if you say it or him as an elected official. I'm not going to have a whole open meeting thing. But when he's an elected official and it says we anticipate passing this, that borders on an open meeting violation. That basically, I know it, you know how the open meeting thing works, but just better than I do. But the moment a public right. official says, I anticipate that Betty and Sharon are coming along with me, that's an open meeting violation. Sorry.
But Chris, I would take that no differently. And I don't want to get into but no differently than the House saying they anticipate passing the bill they passed yesterday. They still anticipated passing it because they had 31 votes. And guess what? When it came down to it, it was a single Republican who they knew was going to go one way or the other, and she went yes. I mean, it was literally one of the last votes voiced, and that took it to 31.
The U.S. Congress, with 434 people and 100 on the other side, do not have the same open meeting laws as municipalities in the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay.
That's true.
When we come back, you and I are going to talk about – you wanted to talk about some federal stuff here.
Yeah, I'd like to just touch a little bit on, from our opinion, and I think a lot of the business community's opinion, what the next federal action should be.
Excellent. Ted Maxwell, Christy Simone, Ed Alexander. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show. Zach Yentz is coming up with the old tipping point in about 15, 16 minutes or so. Wake up. We were, we figured for Memorial Day weekend we should. We're an Air Force town, for goodness sake.
Yay, yay.
Of course, General Maxwell here has spent a little time in that area, so.
I was going to say, Ed just caused me to pop to and stand at attention.
Absolutely, right?
Give us a brief history of your service, and then we'll.
The jet's going over.
He's moving his coffee machine.
You named it. You know, I miss being in the studio where I can just walk out and get a good cup of brewed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I went to the Air Force Academy right after high school, did 15 years active duty, predominantly flying the F-16. Then I made the best decision of my life, and that was to join the Arizona Air National Guard. That's what brought me out to Tucson. I fell in love with this place and got the opportunity to not only fly F-16s for another about 17 years, also had the opportunity to stay here and got very lucky with a lot of things going on in my career, and I really enjoyed it. The Guard's an incredible organization. We've got great units here, and the men and women that serve are phenomenal.
Please tell me you joined the Air Force to fly F-16s because of the movie Top Gun.
No. Unfortunately, I predate Top Gun. That's the problem. I was already heading down that path when it happened. But I will tell you, I am looking forward to the sequel. It's going to be full of as much things that you just scoff and laugh at and say that's not realistic. But the Navy's truly embraces one. I think you're going to see some pretty incredible flying scenes.
I think the flying scenes are going to be great. I love watching a 70-year-old Tom Cruise fly planes. It's awesome.
Well, I tell you, it's 70 going on 12. Yeah, it's amazing. He's got that look. He's figured it out.
All right, we got 3 minutes, so get it off your chest, Mr. Maxwell, about the federal side of this.
So real quick, we've spent all of our time right now, you know, falling on talking about what we're doing wrong, and I think there's an opportunity for us to do some things right. Obviously, the $3 trillion package that was passed out of the House was, I think, by all accounts, political partisanship, just trying to make statements. You've heard it's dead in the Senate. It's not going to go anywhere. But what we've been trying to emphasize, and a lot of business organizations have been trying to emphasize throughout recently, is that we need to start turning from, you know, just necessarily giving money to people to infuse money back into. Let's make some investments. Let's put money where we're going to create jobs, where when it's all said and done, we're going to have something to show for it, and it will drive our economy for a long time. And I truly believe that that's infrastructure. We've talked a lot about the need to get out and support restaurants and retailers and the businesses that are open back up. And I'll tell you why is our state lives and dies on state sales tax collections. The ADOT is already showing over the next 3 years, they believe their collections are going to be $711 million short. We haven't even seen what the projected revenues are. I mean, I think the state legislature is going to really have a hard time making the budget work this year. That's why they will be going back in session at some point to address it. But it's not just – so I think at a minimum, we can talk about long-term FAST Act at the federal level, and most of these dollars we're talking now are federal issues. I think there's an opportunity for the Senate and the House of Representatives to show both the concern about the impacts of the coronavirus and the COVID and what were the actions and that we've had to take to try to ensure that it doesn't spread by putting money back into the state departments of transportation. Because the loss of the revenue is not just the fact that we're not going to have any money to do any future projects.
Right.
They're going to have to change their five-year plan. We are in danger of losing grant money that we've received. There's $25 million Tiger grant for to convert SR-189 from Nogales to take this nice big port of entry and fix the roads.
All right, amigo, we got to go. Ted, thanks for all your service today. Thanks for all your military service.
No problem.
We're ending our Memorial Day show with Taps. Ted, have a great weekend. Talk to you soon, sir. And remember, Zach's coming up on Tipping Point. I'm going to shut up and let Taps take us out for our Memorial Day weekend. It's the reason for this weekend is men and women who gave their lives for this country. Wake up.